Hey everyone, Craig Baird here. Before I begin today's story, I want to take a moment and ask that you check me out on Patreon at www.patreon.com/CanadaEHX. There are several tiers with great benefits, from ad-free content to t-shirts and other cool stuff.
And I have plenty of wonderful merch in my store, and the link is in my show notes.
As well, if you're a fan of Canadian history, make sure you check out all of my shows, from John to Justin, Canadian History X, Canada, A Yearly Journey, and Pucks and Cups, along with Canada's Great War. And don't forget, you can also donate directly to the show at www.canadaehx.com. Just click donate. It helps keep this show going. Okay, on with the show.
For centuries, the land that Gladstone sits on was the traditional territory of several indigenous groups, including the Anishinaabe, but primarily the Cree and Ojibwe people. The bison would migrate through the area, providing an important source of food and supplies for the indigenous. Today, Gladstone sits on Treaty 2 land. When Europeans first arrived in the area of Gladstone, it was given the name of Third Crossing, as it was the third crossing over the White Mud River. By 1872, the community started to grow and a new name was chosen. This time it was Palestine. That name only lasted for 7 years, until 1879, when a third and final name was chosen. Gladstone. The community would be named for William Ewart Gladstone, who was the Prime Minister of Britain at the time. In the 1890s, a terrible blizzard hit the area of Gladstone, which was relayed in the book I Lived in Paradise by Margaret Gallalo. In the story, Roger Gallalo begins to hear customers talking about the snow that was starting to fall in the area. His two daughters were still in school and he began to worry about them making it home. Since the school was not far, he decided to venture out, but soon found himself lost in the blowing snow. He couldn't see any tracks, and the buildings around him were obscured. Thankfully, he reached the school just as his daughters were getting ready to leave. With his daughter Nina holding onto his hand, and Margaret riding piggyback on him, he made a shortcut across the prairie towards the blacksmith shop, but he had to turn back. They would struggle through knee-deep snow in the dark until they finally reached the door of their home. Meanwhile, back at the school, the teacher waited until every student had been picked up before she attempted to walk to her boarding house. She tried her best to get home, but fell in the snow exhausted. Thankfully, another man happened to be making his way through to his home and tripped over her. He carried her to his home, saving her life in the process. Sadly, that school would be destroyed by a fire 2 decades later, on October 9, 1918. The building was completely destroyed, resulting in $18,000 in damages. On June 1, 1899, William Claxton was born in Gladstone, and he would enlist to fight in the First World War as a member of the Royal Flying Corps on his 18th birthday. After completing his pilot training, he was sent to the Western Front. In short order, he became the most successful airman of his squadron, claiming 37 victories in the air in only 79 days. This was accomplished by shooting down several planes in a single day, multiple times. From June 27th to June 30th, he shot down 13 aircraft, and on June 30th alone, he shot down 6. Due to his freewheeling style in the air, his planes were often the worst for wear. He would often return back to base with the plane shot up, and on at least one occasion, crash-landed. On August 17th, 1918, Claxton was shot down behind enemy lines, suffering from a serious head wound. His life was saved by a German doctor who performed cranial surgery. The Kingston Weekly British Whig would report, "With 33 enemy planes to his credit in less than 4 months, Flight Lieutenant William Claxton was now a prisoner of war." Captain Frederick McCall would say of Claxton, "I doubt if there is an airman living who can touch my little fighting partner's record for within 4 months in France. He officially downed no fewer than 33 enemy planes of all sorts." Over the course of his flying career, Claxton was awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross with Bar and the Distinguished Service Order. Claxton remained a prisoner of war until the end of the war. He would return home to Canada in December 1918, and he spent the rest of his life working as the financial editor of the Toronto Telegram and as the manager of the Claxton Financial Digest. He would die on September 28, 1967. I've spent most of my life living in rural areas in Canada, and I remember the days of dial-up internet and spotty high-speed service. Thankfully, I have been a customer of Explorer, and I can honestly say that it was the best rural internet I have ever had. My job as a podcaster means I have to spend a lot of time researching online, interviewing people over Zoom, and uploading content. Through it all, Explorer provided me with excellent service. When I was not working, I enjoyed streaming content on several streaming platforms and even doing some online gaming with a friend in Ontario. Explore allowed me to do all of that with ease. And right now they offer up to 50 megabits per second on their new LTE network with unlimited data. Their service has also only become faster and better. Today and beyond, Explore is investing in building and upgrading the network at a rapid pace. Explore is rural, and that is their route, and that is their focus. For more information about rural internet options in your area, go to explore.ca or call 1-866-285-2253. In 1902, work began on the brick Galloway Brothers department store in Gladstone. The two-story structure continues to occupy a deep lot in the community and has become one of the lasting landmarks. The building was built as one of the earliest facilities of its type outside the urban centers of the province. With large windows and a fine interior metal detailing, it was meant to emulate the large stores of Eaton's at the time. It was also built where it would have access to rail transport, and it's been occupied by several commercial businesses over the years. The building would also become a provincial historic site in 1989. In 1905, the Smith Arthur Farm Elevator was built. This small grain storage building sits on farmland near Gladstone and is an example of a grain handling facility built for the large progressive farms at the time. The building continues to stand to this day, despite being made of wood in a rural area, and is still used by the farmer who uses the land. Due to its historic nature, the elevator was made a municipal heritage site in 2004. If you visit Gladstone, the first thing you will notice is a very large rock smiling at you. That is Happy Rock, the symbol of the community. Happy Rock dates back to the 1970s when the provincial government was looking for ways to develop and implement strategies to increase tourism traffic in rural communities. Since Gladstone was referred to as Happy Rock by the locals, the decision was made to create a symbol of that to draw in tourists. In 1984, the Chamber of Commerce decided that a mascot was needed and a logo contest was held. Jerry Wickstead, a student at William Morton Collegiate in Gladstone, submitted the winning entry. In 1988, Gladstone registered Happy Rock as a trademark, and from 1991 to 1993, fundraisers were held to raise money to help build a roadside attraction, and by 1993, this was successful. Happy Rock was created out of fiberglass, taking 4 months to complete. The statue cost $92,000 to make and stands at 36 feet high and weighs over 3,000 pounds. The statue was unveiled to the public on July 1, 1993, and has since become the lasting symbol of the community. In 2010, Canada Post released a stamp depicting Happy Rock. If you'd like to learn more about the history of Gladstone, then you should visit the Gladstone District Museum. This museum contains many artifacts from the pioneers of Gladstone, as well as a replica of the town constructed by a local resident. There's also the Royal Canadian Legion Room, the Mason's Display, a church display, and a school display. Outside the museum, there's a signalman's shack, the 1914 Boyd House, and a CN caboose to explore. If this is your first time listening and you like what you heard, please take a moment and give us a 5-star review to help other people find these amazing stories. And there are so many for you to sink your teeth into. If you enjoy this podcast, then please check out my other podcasts, From John to Justin, Canada, A Yearly Journey, Pucks and Cups, and Canada's Great War. We love hearing from you, so if you have a show topic you want me to cover, email me at craig@canadaehx.com. Or stop by my website and social media. I'll include all of those in my show notes.